Michael Jonathan, Woodsong's Old Time Radio Hour. He does just about everything you can imagine as a singer, performer, writes books, paints. We're going to talk about his latest album, Cosmic Banjo, and also about the latest volume of one of his Woodsong's compendiums, which is kind of a reader. I would call it a reader that you might want to just kind of pick up and browse through. We'll talk about that. Stay tuned for a nice conversation with the old tree hugger himself. To the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a tune in the evening from my guest today, Michael Jonathan. It's off of Michael Jonathan's newest album, Cosmic Banjo. Always happy to talk to Michael Jonathan on Unreal Bluegrass. How have you been?
Steve, it's good to talk to you, too. I've been busy, been a little crazy. And we're all fighting the fine fight, trying to get through time and holidays and viruses and everything else that's going on in the world and staying as musical and front porch as we can.
You are. You might recognize Michael more immediately from Woodsong's old-time radio, but there's so many branches of that now that he's on, you know, hundreds of stations and hundreds of radio, TV stations combined. But Michael also writes and records music, and that's what I have now. He also writes books. I guess the most recent book then is what I would call Volume 5 of the Woodsong's Fireside Compendium. And that may have came out when we did Painter, but I just got a new copy of it again and re-looked it through. But it's a great, you do a great job. Here's the thing that tickles me, Michael, about your writing. There's no table of contents.
I know, right?
And it's great because you have to get into it. You have to get into it, and some of them are, and I'm talking particularly about this fifth edition. There's a paragraph about this, to maybe a page and a half or 2 pages about something else, or Pete Seeger, or maybe about Theo, Vincent Van Gogh's brother, but some are short, some are long, some are historical biographical things, some are thoughts that you have. But I personally love the fact that it's more like an interactive art, because you have to get into it. You can't say, I'm going to read chapter 9 because I want to hear about this person. You just have to kind of thumb your way through it and relax.
Well, you know, when I was putting the book together, Woodsong's 5 is an exploration of the world of artists that people thought sucked. Well, the world of artists that...
I'm upset that I didn't make it.
Because you don't. But it's Vincent Van Gogh, nobody liked him. You know, yeah. Michelangelo was an arrogant prima donna. Nobody got along with him. Rembrandt, the master Rembrandt that everybody reveres so much, who died a pauper, buried in an unmarked grave. Da Vinci, who couldn't finish a single painting. He had a hard time finishing anything. And, you know, the great masterpiece, The Last Supper, with Jesus sitting at the table with all the apostles, that's not even the painting that they did. Mm. It's a reproduction, because the original was done on plaster and it fell apart, and this is another artist's interpretation of what he thought the original Last Supper looked like. And that's what we have today.
Yeah.
And the book, you know, history doesn't have an index. History doesn't have a chapter index.
Listen,
you know, you have to live it year by year.
I knew you did it on purpose. That's why I brought it up. And I kind of tickled. I was tickled as I was going through it, and I thought, this is so great, because you just have to go into the depth of it and read each portion, and you can't, because sometimes table of contents, we do pick and choose as to where I want to read that, and then, okay, I'm done with it. But this one, you got to work your way through, and I like that approach. I really do.
Well, I'm very grateful for all the good reviews that the book has been getting. It was the most difficult of the series for me to write. Of course, I had no idea when I started the Woodsong's books that they would become a series of now 5 volumes. I mean, that part is, you know, pretty fun to think of that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stories in there, like John Denver could not get a record deal had it not been for an intern at a label that just pounded the office door and said, you need to sign this guy, he's worth it. And they finally relented and signed John Denver, and he became the biggest selling artist in the world because of an intern.
Wow.
You know, his huge hit record, Country Roads, he recorded it with a broken hand. He was in a car wreck, and he went to the studio with a broken hand. He could barely play the guitar. And there's the one of the biggest hits that
of
he
all
had.
Time, yeah, and still yeah. and still going strong. Yeah, it's the stories you collect are great, and I enjoy the way you express them, of course, and I just enjoy talking to you about all those different things. And you've done a lot of painting over the COVID shutdown. I think you're still working on some paintings right now.
Still, I just finished the past two weeks, working on a big third one now. Matter of fact, it's sitting in front of me as I'm talking to you. And, it's a fun thing. The Caney Creek Motion Picture got options for production. The producers are coming to they're coming into Kentucky, and they're scouting and looking at locations and stuff. That's exciting. And, you know, Wood Songs is back in production. Hopefully this new variant won't shut it down again. I don't think it will.
Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think so either.
People get nervous.
They do. If you're just tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass, talking to my friend Michael Jonathan, who is only just a scant throw down the road, but I don't see him that much anymore for a lot of reasons. I think we just don't get out. Michael has invented names of restaurants that I'm supposed to take him to if I can find them. But I still don't think it exists anymore, but I've got that written down. I'm going to find it for you. And if you come back
Holly's
this way.
Trolley, I know where it is
all right.
in Cincinnati.
Well, all right, then.
Next time in Cincinnati.
You pick me up and I'll drive, or you show me directions, we'll get there. But
there you go.
So the audience heard the second cut on this Cosmic Banjo, which has a very cool picture on the front. I don't think that's Michael on the moon. I've seen that picture before, but I think it's a perfect setting for the ending tune, next to the last ending. We'll talk about Cosmic Banjo in a minute. But they just heard In the Evening, which is kind of a blues tune, and talk a little bit about that. We're going to hit some of the songs on the rest of the album as we go through this. But In the Evening, they heard that as we started, and I wanted to come back and let you talk about that.
Well, In the Evening is a Leroy Carr song. He's around the 1930s, a blues piano player from the Deep South, who used to love to look out his door as the sun went down, and he loved sitting on his porch, but you can't bring a piano out on the porch. And so he wrote a beautiful front porch song called In the Evening, and it was written on the piano, but it lent itself really well to the banjo. So the entire Cosmic Banjo album is sort of a celebration of the long neck banjo. All these songs I play on the long neck open back banjo, the same banjo that Pete Seeger and the Kingston Trio used.
And when you say that, I know what you're talking about. I think the audience of Unreal Bluegrass is hip enough to get it, but tell them what a long neck is.
Pete Seeger, the folk singer Pete Seeger, invented the idea of a long neck because he hated to have to retune his guitar, his banjo, to play songs that didn't fit his voice. So he went to an instrument maker and said, you know, hey, can you just extend the neck three more frets so I could just simply tapo down? I could play everything I want in G and C chord patterns, but I just tapo it down so it fits my voice better.
Yeah.
So the long neck banjo was brought to life essentially because Pete Seeger was lazy.
Good for him. And it has a really unique sign. It's an open back, so you get all that. But, yeah, it's a neat thing to see. I've never picked one up to play one. Take that back. You brought one. You might have brought one.
Well, one you did play.
Yeah,
you played it very well.
Yeah.
Red Deering at Deering Banjos, a Vega logo by mistake.
Okay.
Because the previous owners didn't renew the trademark. Greg just happened to find out that the Vega name, the famous Vega banjo name, was out there for anybody to take, and so he did the right thing. You know, the Deering Banjo Company is the greatest protector and benefactor of the Vega legacy, and these were the people that made Pete Seeger's banjo back in the day. So now Deering Banjos makes the Vega long neck banjo, the same banjo brand that Pete Seeger played, and that's the same kind that I play.
It's a great sound. By the way, your playing is very good and crisp on this entire album. I want to talk about Moonfire in just a minute to get into that. But it's a good album, I think, for a singer to accompany themselves, because it has all different tones that are available. You can have soft tones. I know you play with one pick one way and one pick the other way, kind of backwards, so that you can strum it and also pick sharp notes, or I mean, crisp notes. Yes, I don't mean sharp.
It's picking and frailing at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a good sounding banjo, and I think your playing is with all the banjo stuff is really good. And which leads me to Moonfire, which is the third cut on the album. There's a neat little harmonic opening that you do, and again for the audience, I want you to explain that just a little bit as you're opening up the tune.
Well, Moonfire, when I was writing the Caney Creek motion picture script, I was trying to think of, you know, you're in the hollers of Appalachia, the sun has now gone down, the sky above the holler, the mountains are so close and so tight, and the moonrise over those mountains as midnight comes along. It's just a beautiful, beautiful sight. If you've not been in Appalachia and experienced what it's like to be in those hollers at night, I wanted an instrumental that reflected that majesty and that beauty. And so that's where the song Moonfire and the title comes from. I was thinking of someday the Caney Creek motion picture would be made, and I could picture this as one of the tracking scenes.
Yeah, in
Appalachia.
I think so. Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be a great, it's perfect for that. Couple of live cuts on the album. You have How Can I Keep From Singing, which is live. With the
Niles String Quartet.
Yeah. Tell me about that one, because this is Michael Jonathan. Some of this is stripped down Michael with a banjo, but not How Can I Keep From Singing.
Yeah, that was done in front of a live audience, the Niles String Quartet, which is a beautiful, world-class string quartet. And they agreed to play with me, and we got the audience to sing. This is a very old song, How Can I Keep From Singing? And I thought the audience sounded great, and everybody was in tune. Even the banjo was in tune. So I said, well, let's
like anybody could tell. Like anybody could tell on that set.
Oh, yeah, you can tell when it's not in tune.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very plush sound as opposed to some of the other tunes, which are pretty sparse. But that's a beautiful, it worked out well. I did not know the Niles String Quartet until they showed up on this album, so I'm very impressed with what you're doing with them.
Spectacular, spectacular players. Classical players, and they perform in art centers and theaters, and they're kind of world famous.
Well, now I know about them, thanks to you. Michael Jonathan, I'm speaking to Michael Jonathan about many things, and not the least of which Cosmic Banjo, which is his latest album, which is on Poet Man Records. We'll talk about how people can find that. And we talked a little bit about the fifth compendium of the Woodsongs books. There's a sitar sound in Baghdad Breakdown, which is one of the tunes that was intriguing to me. And I hear it as a sitar. I don't know what you're doing.
It's an actual sitar, played by a musician from India.
Okay. There you go.
What I was trying to do, I was trying to imagine what a bluegrass band in Saudi Arabia would sound like. If Bill Monroe did not invent bluegrass in America, what if somebody else invented bluegrass in the Middle East? What would it sound like? And that's when I created the Baghdad Breakdown.
Now I know the answer, and the audience knows the answer. There's a lot of great things. That's what I speak a little bit about the book and your approach to that, and this album, which is, you know, really focuses on your playing of the banjo and all these different settings and different sounds that you're getting from it.
Well, a little secret on Baghdad Breakdown. Mm-hmm. That's John Callen playing bass and Sam Bush on mandolin.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good company. Which kind of swings me back up to the first cut. Logically, Ballad of Bojangles, where you have John McEwen, one of those nitty gritty dirt guys, joining you with on mandolin, I think.
Well, you know, Mr. Bojangles, the famous hit record written by Jerry Jeff Walker. You know, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, they found the 45 single in the trunk of their car, played it all warped and stuff, and loved the song, recorded their own version of it. And Nitty Gritty Dirt Band had a huge hit record with Mr. Bojangles.
Yeah.
I heard it on the radio one afternoon, and I couldn't help but feel like there was more to the story than what Jerry Jeff wrote in that fascinating account of this little old man dancing away in a jail cell. You know, I wanted to know, how did he get there? What was his life like? And so I created the Ballad of Bojangles as sort of chapter two of Mr. Bojangles.
And he was a real guy. He was a real guy. Bojangles Robinson. If you go back and find some old, I forget the Shirley Temple movie, but that's the guy dancing down the steps with Shirley Temple's. I'm almost
that's
certain.
Right. Yeah. No, he was a real guy. Jeff wrote an incredible classic American story song that is really fun to sing. I'm not claiming mine is in the class of Jerry Jeff's song, but I wanted to write chapter two. And I brought it to John McHugh, and I said, you know, this isn't to replace Mr. Bojangles, but this is my version of what chapter two would have looked like. You know, what the story would have looked like.
Sure.
And John loved it, and he says, well, I want to play on it. And so we're doing the track, and at the very end of Bojangles, John played the opening riff of Mr. Bojangles on his mandolin.
It's very recognizable. I'm going to use that, Michael, as an introduction to play that tune for the audience. We'll play Ballad of Bojangles, which is as described by Michael Jonathan, part two or follow-up to the Mr. Bojangles tune. It's a great song. And then listen for the end as he described it. When the audience hears that, we'll come back and I'll continue talking with Michael Jonathan. Hold on. All right, that was it, the Ballad of Bojangles off of Cosmic Banjo. That's the first cut on the album, and Michael Jonathan gave a nice backstory for it, and now you've heard it, and we've talked about a lot of the tunes that are on this Cosmic Banjo. There are 11, Michael. There are 10 listed, and one of them is a sneaky bonus track, and that's one of the live cuts. You have a couple live cuts. You have, the one we talked about with the Nile String Quartet, but the sneaky 11th cut, which doesn't show up anywhere until you put it in your player, is Summertime.
Summertime is a Gershwin song, a very, very unexpected thing to play on the banjo, I think. But it is an aria from the opera Porgy and Bess. What I like about Summertime, besides this very positive message, Gershwin wrote an opera about black people at a time in America when you did not do that. It was a dangerous thing for him to do. I'm talking about 1927.
That's right.
You know, you just don't. America just got done with World War I. The Spanish influenza killed millions of people. There was a global economic meltdown. They were just recovering. Everybody was in their place. Everybody was, you know, trying to get back on their feet again. The Great Depression was just around the corner. It was going to hit again. Hitler was about to pound Europe. And here, Gershwin comes out with this very dangerous opera about black people that was supposed to be performed by black opera singers. And it got panned. It got killed. And Gershwin died just a couple of years later. And the opera pretty much sat dormant for decades until the early 1970s. The Houston Opera Company resurrected this opera written by Gershwin about black opera singers performing. And, you know, the civil rights movement had just happened in America. Mm. Martin Luther King and people were becoming more conscientious of equality and inclusion. And so they performed Porgy and Bess, and it became a massive hit. And what now one of the most performed operas in America's musical canon. And Summertime is from that opera. And I thought, that's a folk singer story right there.
Yeah. Help me rethink this. Was Paul Robeson ever involved in the original productions of Porgy and Bess? Or do I have things confused?
He was involved in some of them. Yes, he was.
Yeah, okay.
Paul Robeson, for those who don't know,
yes, please,
was a deep-voiced, powerful. He was the Michael Jackson of his day in the opera world. He was a black artist, became a movie star, a social activist. He was a force to be reckoned with during his time in the 1930s and 40s. He and Pete Seeger were very close friends, and Paul was a champion. He paved the way for Martin Luther King.
Yeah, yeah.
Martin Luther King stood on the shoulders of Paul Robeson.
I like that phrasing. Yeah, I think that's true, and people forget. Yeah, you mentioned he was such, and I'm not trying to take away from your Summertime Live, but I mean, I think it's something to discuss that people forget.
Oh, hey, I am no Paul Robeson. You take away all you want.
People don't remember how influential he was and how well respected that he was for what he stood for his performance voice, which was phenomenal, but also for his appearance, for he was just the most perfect person to speak for what he was trying to speak for. That sounds kind of stupid, but he was an exceptional human being by all accounts, and he had to be that successful.
He was a black man who was very confident that he was a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Capital M in the word man.
Right.
He was a black man.
Yep.
And he was a strong, tall, big, powerful looking man with a powerful voice. His big famous song was "Nobody Knows
Right.
The Trouble I've Seen." And if you go on YouTube and look up Paul Robeson, Nobody Knows. Oh my God, his voice was incredible.
That is amazing.
And,
it's amazing.
Yeah, and his rendition of "Summertime" is just spectacular. I'm the little white whiny guy with a banjo when I do it, but I defer to the greatness of people like Paul Robeson and Odetta and others.
Yeah, oh gosh, don't get me started on that. Listen, on this album, Cosmic Banjo, which we've just kind of been bantering about, and it's all good stuff, and we could go into more detail on each tune, but you know, we would be sidetracked so many times, Michael, the whirlpools would get us of where we were headed. But you have some very traditional Blue Skies, a nice short cut of that, and then East Virginia Blues. These are tunes that people should recognize automatically, and talk a little bit about those two cuts. They're number 7 and 8, and then we're going to come back and talk to you about some of the other tunes. I'm not going to play these now. I'll play these in the show, but Blue Skies, pretty traditional tune. I think most people know it, maybe not.
Blue Skies is a song that Irving Berlin wrote. Again, you know, you're looking at a time in America where you know, there's a global virus, nations are pushing at each other, you know, millions of people are getting sick and dying, and even the President of the United States gets the virus, and we're talking about 1918, the Spanish influenza, and Woodrow Wilson got the Spanish influenza when he was in Europe. He got so sick that his wife took over the presidency, and very few people realized that she was running the country. And in a little room, Irving Berlin was looking at all this darkness and death and despair and people wearing masks and thousands of people dying and getting sick, and he, it will get better. And he wrote Blue Skies as a antidote for all the sadness that he saw going on in the world. He wrote it at the time of the Spanish influenza flu and World War I and everything else, and this was a songwriter's response to the dark clouds above him. He saw the blue skies.
Yeah, well, I didn't have that detail on the song. I've known the song forever, and it still lives, and it still speaks a very positive look at the future and where we are, but I had no idea that was the detail behind it, but that's why I have people like Melissa things out for.
Well, every song has a folk singer story to it.
Mm-hmm. And East Virginia Blues, I think, we used to play that, friends of mine and people, that's a very familiar tune, but maybe people don't know the in-depth. Maybe you have something you can tell us, and just tell us about your version of East Virginia Blues. I'm going to ask you about the Banjokes live cut after that. Then I'll have you introduce that one. But let's talk a little bit about East Virginia Blues, if you don't mind.
Well, East Virginia Blues is a beautiful song. I first heard Stanley and Ralph do their version of it. And, you know, and a lot of bluegrass bands, they do that, you know, hard driving, you know, bluegrass style of interpretation of the song. And I was like, you know, there's a little more musical depth to this thing. I want to treat it as though I'm the one who wrote it. How would I play it? And I got Sam Bush and Rob Ikes and a couple of other friends, and we put together a version of East Virginia Blues. I said, I want this to be completely different from the way anybody else has ever played it. And Sam, I remember Sam sitting there in the little booth in the studio, and he kept listening to the banjo track over and over and over again. He goes, this is strange.
From Sam Bush, that's saying a lot.
I said, well, this is right up your alley. He goes, no, it is. He says, this is different. So I was very proud when he said that. God, it means we nailed it.
And that, by my count, that happens to be the longest cut on the album.
Yeah.
Which is good, because I think what you're doing is slowing. What I interpretation, your version versus the other ones, which were much more, well, you could get play them as fast as you wanted to, is that it was slowed down to more tell the story, and maybe that's why it's that long. I don't know, but it happens to be the longest. I look at my notes.
Well, the lyrics is almost like it's a love ballad.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's so true. I was like, well, let me treat it like it's a love song, not a hard-driving bluegrass thing. This is an Appalachian love song, so let me treat it that way. And Rob Ikes' dobro is just beautiful on there. And Raymond McLean plays fiddle.
Love Raymond.
Yep. So I thought it turned out really good. And you can really hear the richness of the long neck banjo on this one.
And it sounds great throughout. And we've talked about that a little. We talked about the where the long neck banjo came from, and Michael plays that a lot live, and he plays it on this album. It's Cosmic Banjo, so he's going to feature the banjo, but it's really a nice sound. You get a nice tone from what you're playing, and it's very supportive of what you're singing and fits in with the band, and you're with some heavy hitters. I don't think you're in a position where you ever want to try to show off, Michael. I don't think instrumentally, you know what I'm saying, technically I don't think you're going to be you don't want to be Earl Scruggs. You want to be Michael Jonathan. You want to play with the passion that you feel and give those notes the life that you hear and want. But, boy, it's just such a nice touch to what you're doing, and the sound is so great.
Well, the only time that I got on my high horse and wanted to show off is when we recorded Darlin' Corey.
Okay.
Which is played all the way down the neck. And I think the hardest part of that song was making sure the banjo was perfectly in tune, and you are hearing the world's most in tune ever in the history of banjo.
That's
long neck banjo.
That's either saying a lot or it's saying nothing at all.
Well, we played Darlin' Corey as fast as I could, and I wanted it to sound like the Beatles recorded it.
Okay.
And we added a 21 piece string section to it. So there's one case where I was showing off.
That's good. Well, that's good. That leads me then to, and we could talk about these songs forever and the history. And I do these things with Michael when we're just sitting around, but I don't want to keep him that long on the radio. But this is, we've been discussing Cosmic Banjo, which is on, I know the label, Poet Man Records, but before we get to Cosmic Banjo, the banjo song, tell people where they find this and where they can find. They can find Wood Songs if they can just type Wood into a search engine. They'll find Wood Songs. Where do they find
Wood Songs? Is easy. You can get to me through Wood Songs. MichaelJonathan.com/banjo.
Okay.
Is the easiest way. If you spell my name right, you can get right there.
That's asking a lot.
You can Google me. Google Michael Jonathan Cosmic Banjo.
Okay.
It'll get you right to it.
Okay.
But Banjokes, the song Banjokes, I was telling a banjo joke to a famous banjo player, and I just noticed how very uncomfortable the banjo player was. And the banjo player remarked that he really did not like, he didn't appreciate banjo jokes. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why, out of fairness. Because a lot of these brilliant banjo players have made a career out of this instrument, and they want it to be respected and appreciated and admired. I get it. On the other hand, nothing makes people want to play something more than if you're having fun with it.
Yeah.
That's what makes most people pick up a banjo or a guitar. It's people having fun with it, not the serious Rembrandt-type musicians. It's the It's the colorful Van Goghs that are willing to have broad brushstrokes and sloppy textures and thick paints and stuff because they're having fun.
That's right. You know, and then when you're playing to an audience, you and I and several people would notice the intricate playing of some of the best of the best of the best, and we would go, holy cow. But most people don't get it because they're not looking for that. They're looking to be entertained, and they're looking to be brought into the show. To me, band jokes is perfectly fine. They sound like all the same lawyer jokes I've heard to a certain extent modified.
I think they're interchangeable.
I think they are. I've often said that. So there's
After my conversation with him about the jokes, I was like, you know, we need to have a song about every single banjo joke we know.
Take it away from them.
Just do it. You know, it's just to have fun with it. Yeah. And we recorded it in front of a live audience. And you can hear the audience. They're having a great time with it, you know. You know, what do you call a beautiful woman on the arms of a banjo player? A tattoo. Well, how can that not be fun?
I think it's fun.
How can that not be
fun? I think it's fun. I like it. I like it. And I think, too, that if people are afraid of the audience one way or the other, if you do it first and make it a song and make it something, it kind of takes away the edge of someone who might want to yell at a banjo player. I'm not saying they do that all the time. But to me, when you do it, and present it to them first in the fashion that you're doing it, it takes whatever perceived venom is in these jokes, which I don't see it. I just think it's funny. I think you kind of take it from them, and you make it part of the show and part of the enjoyment.
Well, you know, and this is let me use a sensitive analogy, okay?
Okay, just one.
Racism.
Okay.
Nothing calms down racism more than if we enjoy the difference between the races enough to laugh about it. There's nothing that spawns equality and joy between races than if we can laugh about this race tends to have a big nose and this race has big ears, and you're comfortable. You're happy because you're brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
It's when you polarize and protect and shut down, that's when racism becomes more extreme. And I think it's that way in the music community too. If we take ourselves so seriously that we can't joke about things, then we're removing joy. And that's the only reason the audience participates, is because they're being entertained, they're finding joy and happiness, and hopefully their own participation.
And I would add to that, Michael, and you can take this away or not, but I think that if you reach that point, then you might as well be playing in a room by yourself.
Well, a lot of them do.
I know, and the thing is, they don't know it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, look up, folks. There's nobody there.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Michael Johnson, I always enjoy talking to you. I'm glad we had another chance to do it. We've been running through Cosmic Banjo, your new album, and the new book.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Your audience needs to know that aside from a national radio figure that you are, a former board member of the IBMA, IBMA Broadcaster of the Year that you are also an excellent five-string banjo player. This is where your love of the music comes from. You're a musician. So when are you going to put out your own banjo album?
When you come up and we have lunch at this mystery restaurant, we'll get around and bring your
Ollie's
iPhone
trolley,
and we'll record. Okay.
Ollie's Trolley exists in Cincinnati. I'm telling you.
Or
right
just
now
in your mind. Just in your mind. So when you come up to find that place, bring your iPhone. We'll do it just like you do your albums.
No. You gotta do it for real. You are an excellent player. You have a spectacular banjo. Your instrument is beautiful.
I agree.
And you have a deep love for the music, and you just need to come out with a Steve Martin. The Other Steve Martin would be a perfect title.
You know, he's been so kind about the use of the name, he might have to gulp at that. But I think he'd be okay with it. Michael,
I think The Other Steve Martin is a great name for your album.
That would work. That would work. I'll run it past him and see what they say. Michael, I always enjoy chatting. This is a great album. For all the reasons we've discussed, it's perfect to end when you've done the nice introduction, very full, in-depth introduction to band jokes, which I enjoy and laugh at every time. And I'm going to let you get back to work. I know you're busy with wood songs and painting and all the other things happening in your life. I'm always happy to take a little chunk of your time away and give it to the Unreal Bluegrass audience.
It's always a joy. And you have a wonderful program. You bring to life a lot of great subjects that goes beyond bluegrass. But in the end, it comes down to good music, doesn't it?
I think so. That's my goal. And if I've told you before, your model is my starting point. I go for that. It doesn't have to be, it has to be good. It has to be good. It has to be something I like. And that's, I've told you this before, the whole show in a fashion is modeled after Woodsongs Radio. It's just longer.
Well, we are a small community of passionate people, and we all have to stick together and support each other. And you are one of the greatest gatekeepers that music has.
Well, you're very kind, Michael. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. With that, band jokes, and I'll say goodbye to Michael.